This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. America has a new poet laureate, Robert Hass. He was named earlier this month by the head of the Library of Congress. On this archive edition of Fresh Air, we feature an interview with Robert Hass, and we hear from several other American poets. Hass is the eighth poet laureate and succeeds Rita Dove. He was born in San Francisco in 1941. His books include Field Guide, 20th Century Pleasures, and Human Wishes. Poet Carolyn Kaiser described Hass as a poet of domestic passion, for children, friends, the household, the neighborhood, for women as lovers, women as friends. In 1990, I asked Hass if he thought that was an accurate description.
I think that that's, I mean, it's certainly true of one side of my work. I write a lot about family life, or have written a lot about family life.
Why do you think?
Well, I think there are a couple of reasons, but one is just that it was what was given to me to write about in a certain way. I married when I was young and I had kids, and so it was the life that I wrote out of. I also think that starting to write in the Vietnam years, there was such a sense of violence in the world around that in some maybe predictable middle class way, I found myself writing about and out of the family as a center of life from which you know, which was both safe from and imperiled by the sense of violence in the world around.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a poem that I'd like you to read an excerpt from, and this poem has a lot to do with family. Would you put this excerpt in context for us?
Well, it's this poem is called Santa Barbara Road. It's a poem about family life. It's something like picking up a bunch of developed photographs that you've taken over the years, partly of children. I was trying to convey some of what it was like to live in a family, and particularly to do it over time, the way children change and grow up. And so this particular section of the poem begins with an announcement of how old my son is. You can tell from where he is in school. So should I read?
Go ahead.
Leaf comes home from the last day of his sophomore year. I'm sitting on the stoop by our half-dug, still-imagined kitchen porch, reading Han Dynasty rhyme prose. He puts a hand on my shoulder, grown to exactly my height and still growing. Dad, he says, I'm not taking any more of this tyrannical bullshit. I read to him from Chia Ya, the great man is without bent. A million changes are as one to him. He says, and another thing, don't lay your Buddhist trips on me. The span of life is faded. Man cannot guess its ending. In stillness like the stillness of deep springs. In the kitchen, he flips the lid of the blueberry yogurt. I am thinking this project is more work than I want. Joining, scattering, ebbing and flowing. Where is their persistence? Where is their rule? Bullshit, he mutters. What is the existential reality? He has just read Nausea in Advanced English of all this bullshit, Toto. Toto is the dog. It occurs to me that I may not be a very satisfying parent to rebel against. Like an unmoored boat drifting aimlessly, not even valuing the breath of life, the wise man embraces nothing and drifts with it. I look at his long body in a chair and wonder if I tell him to embrace the void. I think he will embrace a lover soon. I want the stars to terrify him once. I want him to weep bitterly when his grandfather dies, hating the floral carpet, hating it that his old aunts have become expert at an obscene event. I would ward off, if I could, the thicket of grief on grief in which Chia Ya came to entire relinquishment as to a clearing. Digging again, I say, you know, I started this job, and I hate it already, and now I have to finish. He leans against the doorpost with a spoon, takes a mouthful. Well, Pop, he says, that's life.
Tell me what it was like for you to be quoting Eastern poets and philosophers to your son and having him tell you that it was baloney and resisting you.
It was a teasing relationship, I think,
uh-huh.
And I think it's a you know, it's necessary for teenagers to shake off what their parents have in mind for them. So I actually liked that period in their lives. I mean, I have one who's still a teenager, but I liked that time a lot, that slightly adversarial tugging that went on in those years.
Poet Robert Hass is my guest. Asian poetry has influenced your writing a lot, as we could hear in the poem that you just read. How were you first exposed to it?
I think it was in the air in California when I was growing up. When I was in high school, the beat poets were beginning to read in San Francisco and beginning to publish. And so as soon as I started reading the poems of Gary Snyder, that sent me back to the poems of Kenneth Rexroth and his translations of Japanese and Chinese poetry. And Rexroth, in turn, sent me back to Ezra Pound's translation of Chinese. Chinese poetry has been crucial for American poetry in the 20th century. And so it was very much in the air, and probably more so on the West Coast. So it came quite naturally.
I don't know if this is at all accurate or not, but I sometimes think of Chinese and Japanese poetry as about reflecting more on perception, on what is seen, rather than looking inside and being autobiographical or, you know, thinking about something that you've experienced.
Well, there, of course, we're talking about thousands of years of poetry, the two cultures combined,
Right, and what I've said is absurdly general.
But so if you think about the early Japanese poetry, like the poetry of Lady Komachi, it's a lot like Sappho. It's interior and it's erotic and it's full of longing. But there is a tradition, and it was the tradition that came into American poetry, of poetry of perception, especially perception of nature. And it had the quality, in English translation anyway, of being amazingly clear-headed. And so just at the time when American poetry was trying to, I think Ezra Pound said, clean the windows of perception, clear the mind, this wonderfully clear-headed, fresh seeing poetry out of Tang Dynasty China began to be translated, and it seemed to a lot of people just what they were looking for in the way of a new way of seeing.
Is that what you wanted too in your poetry, to get that sense of freshness and cleanness?
Well, it was tremendously attractive to me at the time that I started writing. You live a life, and what you want to get at changes.
Yeah.
And I think maybe when I started writing that work, which was a lot like, in its clarity, the descriptive parts of Hemingway of a lot of American male writing, it was very appealing to me. And then later, when it came to seem that I just wanted to deal with other more complicated, what did you say, more psychological and interior materials, then I needed another idiom than that. It was true that kind of writing can teach you to, look at the world very freshly and in original ways. But there is in it a bit of, as in something like Hemingway's Big Two-Hearted River, a thing like, I'm describing what I see, you guess what I'm feeling.
Yeah, you know, right, that's, right.
It was equivalent to the male, yep, nope, thing about feeling that I grew up with. And so then I wanted to find another idiom to talk, as I got to a place where I wanted to deal with other kinds of emotional materials than the haiku wouldn't do, or the four-line Buddhist description of nature.
Robert Hass is America's new poet laureate. Our interview was recorded in 1990. This is Fresh Air.